van. Now it gives me great pleasure, and it's always an honor to introduce our main speaker, especially today. We're wondering if who is going to show up, Craig. And look, we got 125 people. You brought them in now. But once again, it's a guy that I truly love and appreciate his recovery story, and I hold on to your seat. So once again, let's hear from Craig A. from Los Osos as our main speaker.
Yay, evening everybody, Craig Alcoholic. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm so sorry. Happy Independence Day, everybody. So glad to be here. Terry, thanks so much for your 10 minute. That was fantastic. And Brenda, thank you very much. So many visitors here. I'm happy to see everybody. A lot of friends I haven't seen in a while. Jane, it's nice to see you. And Wendy, my sister from another mister. It's great to see everybody. And last of the housekeeping business, I suppose I have an obligatory thank you I have to give to Inette for having the very poor judgment of inviting me to come and talk at this meeting. I will remember last year at the meeting when she came and invited me. I don't remember what she said, but I remember what I heard. I remember it exactly. And what I heard her say was, "Hey, Craig, will you speak next July? Every speaker in the world that's worth a damn is going to be in Detroit at the World Convention, so I don't have anybody. And every AA member who's anybody, including everybody that goes to the South County speaker meeting, is going to be in Detroit. So nobody's going to be there to hear you. And I know you're crippled, so you probably won't be in Detroit yourself, so why don't you come down? And you can just talk with yourself." Again, I don't remember what Inette said, but that's what I heard her say, and I was happy to agree. So here I am, camping out at Lopez Lake over 4th of July with my camping sponsor, Robert. We've been going to Big Sur camping for 25 years, and he now carries this dead weight through the camping time. My favorite AA story, there's a couple of newcomers identified, perhaps some more joined in. My favorite AA story of all time is a story about the newcomer that goes to the old timer, says, "You got to help me with my battle with alcohol." The old timer says, "The battle's over, you lose." And that is exactly what had happened to me. And if there are any newcomers here and you're anything like I was when I was new, I had the attention span of a gnat, and I just wanted the solution. I wanted to get it over with, get me out of here. And so I'm going to give you my key to sobriety right up front. It has always been, since I very first came in, I've always had a home group, and I've always had a service position, and I've always had a sponsor. No matter where I moved or what I did, I've always had a home group and a service position and a sponsor. And right now my home group is Open Door Meeting. It meets every Wednesday night in Los Osos at 7 o'clock, and it's the very best meeting in the whole wide world. And I always say that tongue in cheek, because when I went to my first convention, I heard a speaker say once that his meeting was the best meeting in the whole wide world. And then he said, "If your home group isn't the best meeting, what aren't you doing?" So I just adopted that. And I've always had a service position, and right now I'm serving on our 22nd District Convention Committee. And the convention is coming up at the end of next month, the end of August. It's going to be a Zoom convention. And Inette, unlike this meeting, Inette went to great lengths to get great speakers for the convention. So I encourage everybody to go. You can just Google District 22 Convention. You can register online. There is no cost to register, but they want everybody registering so that they can email to everyone the Zoom codes, because they don't want to post them on public media. So there's that. And then I've always had a sponsor, and for the last going on two decades or so, I I like to jealously guard and protect my sponsor's anonymity, even at group level. So I'll tell you, his name is Ron Scow of Morro Bay, 805-440-0331. And if anybody is thinking of getting drunk or just having a mental breakdown, he loves calls at 2:30 in the morning. Feel free. And that's just how things have gone up till this point. I don't know. I don't know why Annette asked me to do this. I'm so unimpressed with my story. You know, me and my dear sweet friend Brett, we are the illustrious founders of a club within the club. It's such a secret society. We are the only two members within AA, and it's the loved too much club. I was only child, raised in a non-broken home, spoiled rotten little brat. Mom cut every single orange wedge for every single AYSO, halftime soccer, baseball. She was team mom. She made every banner for every team. She was the assistant coach. My dad was president of every league I was ever in, and I was coddled and nurtured. And the old story, Craig has such potential if he'd only apply himself. And despite all the promise and all the hope, I was facing 13 felony counts of credit card fraud by the time I was 17, because I loved smoking cocaine. I had been taken out of my photo class at University High School in Irvine in handcuffs because I had a pound of marijuana rolled up for distribution. I can't believe that shit's legal now. What's going on? This is not right. And I had stolen my mom's van out of the garage in the middle of the night in a blackout, rolled the van on the I-5, turned down by Dana Point, and walked away from that. And on Cinco de Mayo 1988, I was celebrating Mexican independence with my Mexican buddy Wilbur Valencia in Tijuana, and got thrown into Tijuana jail in a blackout. And that was about where I'd gotten myself with all that potential. It had just come to a head. And, you know, I can look back now in those formative years in sixth grade when, you know, just as puberty starts to set in, you know, most young men, it's my experience anyway, that a lot of young men, it just comes that time around when they get toward puberty that they get in their first fight. And, you know, it happened to me. I don't know why I got in that fight. I didn't dislike the guy I was fighting. It was just time to get into a scrapping brawl. And it was just establishing the pecking order of who's the toughest guy in that first fight. And I got in a fight with Tarek Saba, this little Iraqi refugee kid that started going to our school, and I didn't dislike him. He was 4 foot nothing, and I was 6 foot four back then. I only weighed about 77 pounds, but I would always been, you know, tall and skinny. And anyway, he immediately got me in a headlock and started pulling my hair, and I began to cry, and he let me go, and I ran home. And that was the last time I ever been in a fight. And I learned in the sixth grade that I have zero tolerance for pain. Absolutely hated every single bit of it. So when I got into AA as an alternative sentencing as a youth in lieu of custody time for all those problems I had, I walked into AA and it was welcoming and it was warm and it was loving, and everybody's keep coming back, and I couldn't get enough of it. I got out my AA pom-poms and just started cheerleading with everybody else. Isn't life great? And I got 6 months to the day. I took a six-month chip on Halloween day, October 31st of 1988, and I went home with my six-month chip, holding onto that big book under my shoulder, or under my armpit, and I was just on top of the world. And there was a guy that was living with his parents in a condo up above where I was living with my parents in their condo, and I had used to do a lot of partying with that guy, and he was throwing a Halloween party that night. And I was downstairs, and about 11 o'clock, it started getting pretty loud. And I went upstairs and I knocked on the door and I said, "Hey, you guys, sounds like you're having a lot of fun, but you should keep it down, because I'd hate for somebody to call the cops and bust up your party. It sounds really fun." And went back downstairs, no thought of drinking at all. I had my 6 month chip in my book, and I was on top of the world. Sobriety was great. And that party started getting louder, and I went up a second time and knocked on the door. "Really, you guys, you should keep it down. I would hate to see your guys' party getting busted up. Sounds like you're having fun. Don't worry about me. I'm sober and I'm great and I'm fine. But you guys keep it down. Went downstairs and party started getting louder. Went up a third time. Hey, you guys, keep it down. Really, I'd hate to hear, you know, see your party get busted up. So I went back downstairs and that party got really loud. And I went up a fourth time and knocked on the door and said, hey, you know, load me a bong rip and give me a beer. And I just did not have any mental defense against that first drink. I did not know I had not fully conceded to my innermost self. I didn't know I had a reservation, but I did. And I went back to AA to a meeting the next morning, confess my sins, raise my hand, you know, get absolution and be welcomed back into the club. And this young guy that I'd been hanging out with in the program came up to me, Tom, and he said, hey, you went out last night? I did too. Let's go. And we hopped in my car and we headed off to Vegas. And I spent I don't know how many days, 8 or 9 days in Vegas, just in a brownout. A lot of my drinking I describe as a brownout. I remember things and I was a spectator, but I wasn't controlling my thoughts at all. It was just a mess. And, you know, ended up with a gun to the back of my head out in the projects trying to score and taken into custody in a casino about just being a drunken juvenile nitwit. And anyway, on November 9th, the night of November 9th, Tom and I hopped in the car and we left Vegas proper because it's in Clark County and the Clark County lines. And you can do a lot of stuff in Las Vegas, but it's not necessarily legal. But if you go right outside of the Clark County lines out into the desert, it's a lot of stuff. It's not regulated and it's even more legal, even though the state regulates it. And they put buildings out in the middle of the desert and some of them have airstrips, and when the sun goes down, they flick on a red light, and there's lots of ladies there, and so long as you have cash, you make new friends and have a party. And so Tom and I went out to some building in the middle of the desert with a red light on, and that night, or that morning, actually, November 10th, I drank a rum and a Coke and a Budweiser and smoked a joint with a new friend, and God willing, that'll be the very last time I ever take a drink, use a drug, or catch the crabs ever again. And I got back into that car and headed back to Orange County that next morning because the party was then completely over. And I went back to confess my sins once again, walked into the Saddleback Valley Fellowship Center off of Raymond Way in El Toro, and raised my hand. It was a beginner's meeting. And there was this old guy that sat in the back, just rolled his thumbs on his belly and judged everybody from afar. And he was something else. And after the meeting, I'd raised my hand as a newcomer again, and he came up and he said, you know what you're going to do is you're going to come to my home group. It's the Mission Viejo Missionaries Discussion Group. It meets every Wednesday night at the corner of Oso and Marguerite Parkway at 8:30, and you're going to show up tomorrow night. And I didn't have any better plans or excuse, so I got dropped off there that Wednesday night, and it was in November, and they used to, I don't know if they still do, but they used to rotate service positions religiously every 6 months in June and November to avoid the holidays. And it was much different than service positions here on the Central Coast. I mean, I've been on the convention committee for, you know, the last 11 years, and it's tough to find new blood all the time. But down there, it's a popularity contest, and you got to bring your friends and your friends' friends in order to get in, just to try to get a vote to get a service position. But they went through and they elected all sorts of new service positions. And then after they elected everybody, the secretary said, we've been getting complaints from the church about stray cigarette butts. Does anybody want to volunteer? And Ken reached around, grabbed my hand and said, Craig will do it. And the whole room burst out into applause because I was elected butthead for that meeting. And it was very patronizing that night. I remember it well, the way that he showed me how I was going to police the church grounds and pick up cigarette butts and where the Folgers cans go in between Wednesday nights. And after that meeting, after I picked up all the cigarette butts, he was standing outside there and he said, what you're going to do is you're going to show up every Wednesday night for the next 6 months and pick up cigarette butts. When you're done with that, you're going to show up every Wednesday night for the next 6 months and bring celery sticks and cookies. You know, with that 6 months, you're going to set up chairs and then be Grapevine and Treasurer and Intergroup and GSR and Literature. And when you're done with every single service position at this meeting, if you don't drink between Wednesday nights, you'll be over 5 years sober. And damn, that son of a bitch wasn't right. I served every single service position at that meeting when I finally moved away from Orange County on what I call the AA college matriculation plan, 9 years for a 4-year college degree. And I was over 5 years sober. And I had during that time, as I continue to do these days, I had worked the steps at the speed of pain. I love adopting the principles of the steps and employing them in my life. And when things are going the way that I think they should be going, I have no problem at all. And those steps are the most wonderful, marvelous thing ever. And when I'm hurting and desperate and dying inside and life isn't going the way I think I am, it is a desperate grind. That's when I'm forced to get back into those. And that's been my experience, doing that. But my story throughout has always been the same. And that's just chronic malcontent, this having a disease, a discomfort in there. And the story has always remained the same. I mean, although I stayed in Orange County for those 5 years after I turned 1 year sober, because I got the message, don't make any major decisions and don't make any major changes in the first year. So as soon as I turned 1 year sober, I was sitting in my on my apartment floor flipping through a skiing magazine, and in the back in the classifieds it said, "Work at Heavenly, South Lake Tahoe, ski for free," and that just sounded glamorous. And I was pretty miserable there, just a year sober, things weren't going anywhere. I was only 18 years old, 19 years old, and this just, life's going nowhere. I need to get out of here and then I'll be happy, because I'm just discontented. And so I packed up and headed to South Lake Tahoe. It sounded really glamorous to be a ski instructor. So I moved up to South Lake Tahoe and got a job as a ski instructor. I got a home group, I got a service position, I got a sponsor, and I got a job as a ski instructor. And I know that sounds glamorous. It still sounds glamorous to me. Unfortunately, it frickin' sucked. I hated every single minute of it. Spent every day just standing there freezing my toes off, picking up crying, snotting kids off of the sand or off of the snow, and this is miserable. This is the worst thing ever. I got to get out of here. So I packed up and went back to Orange County. Got to get my life on the road. And so went back, got that home group back, service position, sponsor, get going, and I started going to junior college, and started playing baseball just because I used to be able to throw a ball when I was a youth. And so I, 2 years later, I've got actually 3 years because I redshirted. I've got an AA degree, and an AA degree is, not worth the paper it's written on as far as, employability and earning capacity. So I got out of there, but I had some success playing junior college baseball there. And so I had an opportunity, because it just wasn't working out, to go to the University of Alabama, Crimson Tide, Roll Tide, big business. And so I pack up my truck and I head back to Alabama, drive across Texas. I don't suggest doing that, but I did. And landed in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. First thing I did was I got a home group and a service position and a sponsor, and then went to practice and went to baseball practice and went to weight training. And one of the guys that was in my home group was also our weight training coach. He was about 6'7", 290 pounds, and he showed me where he used to play for Paul Bear Bryant, where they used to go to the roller skating class before he went on to play for the Denver Broncos and Washington Redskins until he got drunk and hit the back of a parked fire truck and ruined his career. So then he was back there doing that. But I had those friends, and I used to go to practice every day. And the very first thing we'd do is watch on the big screen, watch the weather to see whether or not we were practicing indoors or outdoors. And then we would they would turn on fishing or deer hunting. And I'm born and raised in Southern California. I knew nothing about fishing or deer hunting. And, frankly, being back there in Tuscaloosa, Alabama sucked. Everybody was born on a chicken farm. They just weren't evolved. And as soon as the word fixin' made its way into my vocabulary, I had to get the hell out of there. Being there absolutely sucked. I hated every bit of it. So I packed up and headed back to the West Coast and went to San Diego. This is going to be great. Now I can surf every day and get my education back on track. and started going to school at the University of Cal State University San Marcos down in San Diego. And the problem with that, of course, was as soon as I got there, there I was. But I got a home group and a service position and a sponsor. Started going to classes and come to find out that the Northridge earthquake in Cal State Northridge, all the damage they suffered, sucked that budget out of the new Cal State San Marcos. And so they had no facilities, and being there really sucked. And I hated that there. But lo and behold, I had also applied to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo and had an opportunity to come up to San Luis and go to Cal Poly. And so this is great. Now I'm going to be happy. Now I'm going to be on my way. So I pack up in January 95 and head up to San Luis Obispo. The very first thing I do is I get a home group and a service position to sponsor, and I start going to Cal Poly. And 2 years later, I graduate with a Bachelor of Science degree. Now, BS sounds really glamorous. It's not a Bachelor of Arts, it's a Bachelor of Science. You think it would go somewhere, but it was a Bachelor of Social Sciences, because all of my human performance non-teaching major classes that I had been taking to maintain eligibility to play baseball didn't transfer into anything. So I've got a BS degree in Social Sciences, which qualifies me to ask you if you'd like your order of French fries supersized. And that was about all that I had going for me. And my degree really sucked, and it was miserable. But through work study, I had an opportunity to work at the probation department. After I graduated, I got a job as a JSO, Juvenile Services Officer, over at the juvenile hall. And it was just ironic. And I had the keys to the joint, and I was in charge of these whiny little brats. And so I'd go over to the Pioneer group at the train station, and I'd say, isn't it ironic? I used to be in custody, and now I'm working custody. Isn't this great? And within about 3 weeks of working that shitty job, I realized this absolutely sucks. Not only does working for the government suck, but working in an agency as large as that sucked. And on top of that, working custody absolutely sucked. And I absolutely hated it. It was miserable. I had to get out of there, but I thought, you know what? I had never known any lawyers except my public defender, but I wasn't qualified to do any hard sciences. I don't do computers. I don't do cars. I don't solve for X. What the hell am I going to do with my life? I thought, shit, I'll go to law school. Then I'll be happy, because I had seen the lawyers coming in and out of custody, and they looked prestigious. They had suits. Some of them even drove nice cars. They were well-spoken. They had it together. And I thought, shit, I'm going to go do that. Then I'm going to be happy. So I applied to law school and got in. So I packed up my truck and I headed up to Santa Clara, San Jose. Now I'm on my way. This is going to be great. Now I'm going to be happy. And I got up there and started going to school. And I'll tell you, law school absolutely sucks. It's the worst thing ever. I had a home group and a service position, a sponsor in Santa Clara, but that was 3 years of just living hell. But I got out of there. I couldn't wait, because I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to get a job. So I finally graduated, and I took the California bar and passed that and moved back to San Luis Obispo. Got a job for David Hagen, but we'll leave that for another day. And I got back down to San Luis Obispo and started practicing in family law. Got myself a home group, service, and sponsor, and I started doing divorce work. And I thought I was going to be happy, strike a blow for justice, make a difference in somebody's life, and it absolutely sucked. It was the worst thing ever. My clients ended up hating me more than they hated their ex and the judge because of unrealistic expectations of what the system was going to give them in the term of justice. Your justice is to stay the hell away from the courthouse. That's the best thing you can possibly do. But it was just miserable, and I was hating every bit of it. But lo and behold, I finally had an income, and I was finally earning money. And if you live here on the Central Coast, because we have a lot of visitors, you will know this to be true. Every weekend, especially during the summer, except for when we're in COVID quarantine, if you look at the freeway on early weekends, Thursday, Friday, you will see lots of people from the Central Valley. And they are driving their really cool F-250s and F-350s jacked up, chromed out. They have their toy haulers and their flatbeds with their dune buggies and their sand rails, and they're heading towards the Pismo Dunes, the last place you can drive on the beach in California, and it looks like they're having fun. It looks like they've got it together, and they look happy when they're heading that direction. And I had always, always, always wanted a Hummer H1. Arnold had one. Why can't I have one? Always wanted a Hummer H1. And so I went down. Now I got a job and I got myself a Hummer H1. It was Barney purple, but that's because it was the only one they had on the lot. So I took it, a Barney purple Hummer H1, and I'm cruising around very liberal, Los Osos, and a Hummer H1, my daily driver. And I got myself a toy hauler, and I got myself a sand rail and a dune buggy and a quad for me and a quad for my wife and a quad for my daughter. And we loaded all that stuff up and headed down to the dunes, Hummer and toy hauler behind. And I thought, this is going to be great. Now I'm finally happy. And I got down to the dunes, drove out there, unloaded everything. And if you haven't been out there, it sucks. The wind blows everywhere. It blows sand into your sandwiches and your ass crack, and it gets everywhere. And on top of that, I was in so much hawk that I had no money left to repair everything, because everything was broken. And I have 10 thumbs, and I just can't do it. That story just goes on and on and on. There's so many. I got to have this, and if I get there, then I'll be happy. And every time, it just sucked. And I tell that story because I've got a dear friend, Bill, down here in South County, and he tells that story in two sentences. He said he thought he had a Porsche-shaped hole in his gut, and it was a God-shaped hole. And that is the way that I've come to it every time. It's a God-shaped hole, and when I'm pursuing that, selfishness, self-centeredness, page 62, it's the root of our troubles, only because my sponsor made me memorize that, because he said that's where all my problems are. And I know for a fact, I found it in the book one day when I was looking for my answer. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves, be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And I needed a purpose, and that has kind of been my purpose ever since, if you will. In 2012, I was, for that year, year-long commitment, I was secretary of my home group at Wednesday night open door group in Los Osos. Happens to be the best meeting in the world, by the way. And I was secretary that year. And on the last Wednesday in February, 2012, it was February 29th, it was leap year. And I was secretarying that night, and right as the meeting was over, my phone rang and I answered it, and it was my aunt. And she called me and said, "Hey, I'm rushing your father down to the hospital. He has a splitting headache. Don't know what it is." And so I got in the car and immediately drove down to South County to the hospital. And that night, I got to sit by my unconscious father's bedside in room number 2 of the critical care unit at Marion Medical Center in Santa Maria, and give him permission to die. He had a brain aneurysm and wasn't coming out of it. And so after he died, you know, we went through the normal shock, I guess, and transition of whatever it is that you're dealing with, and then life goes on. Life just went on, and you got through it. You know, days turn into weeks, turn into months, turn into years, and life just goes on. And then all of a sudden, in 2018, for some reason, the middle of 2018, I just started getting, I'm not saying haunted, but getting haunted with thoughts of my father. I literally started seeing him on street corners. I didn't know. I was never much for dealing with issues, quote unquote, but I thought, I'm going to deal with this. And so I went to hospice and started going to individual counseling. And it was a 12-week program, once a week, going to private individual counseling through hospice, doing grief counseling. And so I did that. And I went to, in the end of 2018, I went to 11 of 12 individual counseling sessions. And then the stupidest thing happened. I went surfing on Saturday, December 8th, 2018, And for reasons I can't explain, I got hit in the back of the head with a surfboard and reportedly lost my life. And I'll jealously protect his anonymity. Rob Clark, Tahoe Rob, swam me out and kissed me or blew air into my lungs or whatever he did until paramedics came and they rushed me to the hospital. And 5 days later, I woke up in room number 2 at the critical care unit at Marion Medical Center. And I don't want to read anything into it, but there I was laying in the same room that Dad went. And I have, since then, since December 8th or 13th, whenever it was I woke up, been learning to live as a quadriplegic. A wonderful trial and error practice. If you were a drunk like me and you enjoyed pissing yourself, try losing your bladder control in sobriety. It's not much fun, pretty damn frustrating. And I've lost all control of in functions of most of my body. I can stand now. I don't have to be in a wheelchair, but I spent a better part of a year when I got out of the spinal cord rehab cruising around Los Osos in a power chair. And so I figured I was going to start a new street gang in Los Osos called the Crips. And so if anybody wants to join my gang, it's not as lustrous as the Loved Too Much Club, but you know, it's exclusive. And so you're welcome. Just come to the Wednesday night meeting once we reconvene and get yourself a power wheelchair, and you might join too. But it has been a true trial and error, and you know, every day learning to live a whole new way. But you know, I oftentimes wonder what the hell is the purpose of this, and I've gotten back to our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And I can't find anything else, and shit, I don't need to find anything else. A lot of days, honestly, I want to die. Just there's no point in living. What the hell's the point? It's so frustrating. I can't do anything on my own. I can't feed myself. I can't bathe myself. I can't dress myself. I can't put myself to bed. I can't get myself out of bed. You know, still physical therapy every day, but who the hell knows? But I do know this. I know that if I stay sober through this and I'm able to get through it, then I know that there is one person somewhere that is going through hell and sobriety, and they can say, well, shit, if Craig can stay sober through that, maybe I can through this too. And that is sometimes as much service as it needs to be. And I don't need to find any other purpose of that. And I want to close with this, because since my accident, I have, I've learned just an awful lot. I probably couldn't even list it if I needed to give me a week. I couldn't list it, but there's a couple of tips I'd like to share with everybody, because they're pretty useful. One of them has to do with life in general, and one of them has to do with specifically with life and recovery. And so as far as, you know, life in general, just will, if you find yourself ever playing Rochambeau with a quadriplegic, always choose paper. And that can never fail you. So just take that with you and do that. And as far as the tip that I have for everybody, in recovery and life in recovery, and I'll just tell you the way it works in my life and what I do. I hope you can find somebody in your life in recovery that serves this purpose for you. Whenever I'm down, whenever I'm depressed and I just feel like I have no hope, what I do is I close my eyes and I take a deep breath and I just say, thank you, God. At least I'm not as old and decrepit and feeble as Ray McGee, and all of my problems just melt away and I feel so much better about myself. So with that, I want to thank everybody for wasting your 4th of July sitting here online. And now I'm going to go home and smoke a cigar.
Let's give Craig one more big round of applause.